the DA, he started the conversation talking, basically telling people what rights they didn't have. How did that strike you when you heard it? Where do you think he was coming from by telling us as the public what rights we are not entitled to, as far as fair procedure?
Yeah, I thought that was really sad, you know, in addition to, I think, being wrong. Because there are different ways of looking at these things, everything from the right to vote and all this, which is that you don't have anything unless the government gives it to you. And that was sort of his position. You know, you don't really have a right to, there's no constitutional right to bail or bond when the Constitution actually says you can't charge unreasonable bail or bond. It's a very sad way of looking at it, because I think we look at it as human rights activists from the exact opposite, is that we have human rights by the mere fact that we are alive, that we breathe, and we don't have to sign anybody's eligibility forms. We don't have to fill out any applications. We don't have to beg for anything. We are entitled to these things, and the government has very limited grants of authority over us and our lives. So therefore, I think the idea that the fact that the government thinks they can take our liberty away, our freedom, which is certainly one of the most important things that any of us has, and then say you don't really have a right to bail or bond as a technical rule. Now, obviously, we do it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I just thought it was exactly backwards, because the whole criminal justice system is backwards. And in fact, I've taken recently to not calling it the criminal justice system, but calling it a criminal legal system, because it really is a legal system that's about criminal, but it is a criminal system itself, I think.
That's what I call it, the criminal system.
Yeah, it really is. And so the bail bond is so near the beginning that it's so important, because we all know, and I'm sure your audience is well aware of the fact that just who the police decide to stop, who the police decide to frisk, and who the police decide to search, and who the police decide to arrest is way out of whack in terms of racial impact, in terms of economic impact. And as a system, it begins at that very first step as a vacuum cleaner, really sucking up primarily young men of color. Women of color, too, some white men as well, but primarily African-American Latino men. And so this idea of bail and bond is so critical, because that's the first time that people have a chance to try to exit the vacuum cleaner or to try to break the chain that's just pulling them arm by arm into the pit of prison for months or years or whatever. And it is a matter of fact that people who are not in jail are much more successful at their trials and motions and everything else than people who are in jail. That's mm-hmm. not a disputed fact at all.
And I must bring up, though, that the process of bail itself, there's disparate access to it. Not everybody can afford to pay bail. So even the fact that there is bail, period, that is accessible to some and not others, and that people are sitting in jail because they can't afford to pay.
Absolutely. No, it's I think, a radically unjust system. Because the idea of bail is that the human rights of all of us, we have the right to be protected from people who would do us harm. So the idea of bail really is only that whether the public needs to be protected from somebody, or we think they will not come back for their court hearing unless we secure some sort of big cash bond. Those are the only legitimate reasons that are there. But even those are suspect if you think about it, because if you translate those two things into money, it doesn't translate. Safety doesn't depend on money. We know mm-hmm. that rich people kill other rich people and other vice versa. Poor people kill rich people and poor people. It's really not about money all the time.
But and most harm is done laterally, because those are the people who you have access to.
That's true. I mean, a lot of violent crime is crime of passion, crime mm-hmm. of whatever. And mm-hmm. so that's why the number one danger to wives is from their husbands, mm-hmm. because that's the person they're most around. And if that person goes a little crazy, they're much more likely to be abused by their husbands, exactly. Teachers and kids, et cetera, et cetera. But so the idea that we can keep people safe by charging a lot of money doesn't make any sense in a fundamentally economically unjust society where there are some people who have a lot of money and most people do not have any extra money, and a lot of people don't even have enough money to make it, you know, week to week, month to month. And so to say, well, safety depends on how much money we're going to charge you is crazy because it just doesn't fit. The second thing in terms of returning for court, I mean, if somebody doesn't want to return for court, the fact that their mother put up a $5,000 bond or their father or their brother or their sister, they're either going to do it or not do it. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, if they don't want to do it. So the whole idea of translating all this into money is just a terrible thing because money is such a source of injustice in our country, mm-hmm. in our capitalist system, which is, you know, basically worldwide at this point. And so introducing money into it right at this spot, I mean, clearly, if you're walking down the street in a three-piece suit and you're driving a BMW or something like that, whatever your race is, you're less likely to be stopped, frisked, and arrested than somebody's on a bicycle with jeans and flip-flops and stuff like that. I mean, economically, the cops know, the law enforcement knows that some people have more rights than others, and those are the economic things. So just based on this thing of whether you go to jail, whether you stay in jail or get out just based on how much money you can raise is totally irrelevant to whether you're actually a threat to society or whether you will actually return. But that's the system. Now, the problem for us, all of us, is people make money off this system. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know from, I'm a 65-year-old white guy, grew up in a big Irish Catholic family in the Midwest. The system usually worked for me. And so my vision of the police was often, you know, sort of the officer-friendly type and, you know, that sort of stuff. Come and you become a civil rights worker in New Orleans and go to prisons, live and work, have friends and family and folks in public housing and low-income housing and people that are in jail. It's a whole different system altogether. And to say that people are, that society is better off by keeping somebody in prison, it makes no sense if you know what prison is, mm-hmm. and what happens to people in prison. And we all know that. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you are. You know what happens in prison. We joke about it. People laugh about what happens in prison to people, et cetera. But we know what happens. And people get violated. They get harmed. It really destroys people to be in prison, even for a day, even for a week, even for a month. And so to say, well, this is a get out of jail card, but it's like the Monopoly game, it has to pay $200. If you don't have $200, then you're going to stay in jail. And if you stay in jail, then you're also going to get a public defender because that's the only lawyer that you can afford. And there's all these consequences, all these dominoes that go forward from this. Plus, at the same time, it was this thing that people make money by keeping you in jail.
Yes.
There's these big systems that profit off of keeping as many people as possible in jail.
And if you do pay bond, then they might remove your access to a public defender, even though that bond might have been not paid by you, most likely wasn't paid by you. And so that also just that other people are paying folks bonds shows the collateral damage on communities,
right.
And how it contributes to generational and cyclical poverty.
Right. And it's absolutely illegal for a judge to say, well, if you bonded out, you don't qualify for a public defender. But that happens every day all over the United States. In almost every courthouse there is. There's some judges that don't do that, but a lot of judges do that. And they do that for a couple of reasons, mostly money reasons. Again, usually they don't have enough money to pay the public defenders, so they don't want to give more work to the public defenders. But the second reason is, particularly in Louisiana, we have elected judges. Our criminal court judges are elected. Who supports them? Who do they fundraise from? They fundraise from private criminal defense lawyers. Criminal defense lawyers, if everybody went to the public defender, there wouldn't be any money for the criminal defense lawyer. And so there's really a pressure in the judge to say, no, I want to make sure this person actually pays for a lawyer. And they think of it, I've heard the judges actually think of it as part of their punishment. You know, this is part of your punishment, but at this point, you shouldn't be punished. You know, you're innocent. And this is another part, obviously, that the district attorney objected to, my suggestion that everybody is innocent until they're convicted of something. And I'm still really bewildered by that. But, you know, and so what we have in New Orleans, obviously prison capital of the world and all that, is that our jail is full of innocent people, full of people who are low income, innocent people, people who are people with mental disabilities or substance abuse problems or those sort of things, self-medication for the inadequate mental health systems that we have here. So it's a punishment to put you in jail, and it. But the other part of that is that it does make money for people. It makes money for the jailers, you know, and the jail industry in Louisiana is a big industry. It's the public jail system. And obviously in Louisiana we have private jails as well. But even for the public jail system, every sheriff, I've been a lawyer for almost 40 years, I've never heard a sheriff say, you know what, I need a smaller jail. I need fewer deputies. It's always, I need more deputies, I need a bigger jail. Plaquemines Parish just built like a 800-person jail after Hurricane Katrina. They have never had 800 people in jail in the history of Plaquemines Parish. And now they are advertising, trying to get other places to send them prisoners to fill up that jail at $25 a prisoner, or much more if it's a federal prisoner, if it's immigrant or somebody like that. So it is a way to make the money, and then in the in both the public jails and the private jails, there's no incentive to do any rehabilitation whatsoever because that costs money. So just lock people up, keep them in a cage 24 hours a day for 7 days a week for weeks and weeks and months and months. And our system in Louisiana, it takes longer for people to get to trial than it does any other place in the country. So you, at this critical point at bail bonds, if you let a person go home, even if they're facing, you know, an arrest, they have to come back. They've only been in jail maybe for 24, 48 hours. They can still maybe hold on to their job. They can maybe still hold on to their rent or their apartment. They can still maybe hold on to their kids. They can hold on to a lot of things. You keep people in a jail for a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, 3 months, you lose everything. You lose the job, you lose the family, you lose the house, you lose all the opportunities of stability that people, that we all need in order to keep going. And then we have this other dimension to the system, which is the private bail bond system. And Louisiana is not the only state. Actually, a lot of states, most states, have private bail systems, but there's some that have outlawed it. And that is where instead if the judge sets a $5,000 bail, then you, mother, father, or somebody goes to a private bonds person, puts up usually 10%, plus maybe 2% that goes to the court and 1% that goes to the public defender and, you know, a couple other fees like that, and usually ends up, I mean, 15% of whatever it is. And they never get that back. But at that, for doing that, the person gets out of jail. And then, so what is that done? We have introduced a little job into this system. We've privatized a part of it. And so is there, and the other thing is the irrationality of it. If my mother put up $500 for me to get out of jail, if I don't go back to jail, if I don't show up in court, my mother doesn't lose. I mean, she's already lost her $500. Mm-hmm. She's not going to get that back. Now, if she has a house, maybe they'll go after the house, but maybe the bondsman will send somebody after me or whatever, but the incentive is even less to do that. But we have a thriving bail bond industry in Louisiana. And again, you talk about who do they support and why do they support. Bail bonds people support judges running for office. Bail bonds people support legislators running for office. Bail bonds people support city council members and county and parish council people and that sort of stuff to keep that business going, because it's they only make money off the public process of keeping people in jail to a point at which they you know, that there's a financial incentive for them to be able to make some money.
Is it legal for them to support judges and directly?
Unfortunately, it's absolutely legal. They can give, and most people, if you look at the campaign finance records for people who are running for a judge and running for re-election, they are supported primarily by two groups of people, criminal defense lawyers and the bail bondsmen. And those are the folks that do it. So you're on a first name basis with the judge because you gave money, you went to their fundraiser, you go to every fundraiser they have and, you know, shoot the whatever with them. And they know who you are. They know what your business is. You support them. So you're going to, you know, what's the judge going to do? They're going to, and it's totally legal.
So it completely blocks any kind of reform that would happen in this predatory industry because they're connected and you don't want to take your friend's job away.
Right. It is a job and everybody needs a job, clearly. But there is, in the state of Louisiana, there's two parishes that are really trying to cut the bail bondsman out of that. And in those parishes, people put up a couple percentage for the bail, but they put it to the clerk. You know, so if it's a $5,000 bail, the family comes and puts $500 up with the clerk and promise to pay the other $4,500 if the people don't pay. And then if their son, which is usually their son, shows up and does all that stuff, then the family will maybe get $450 of that back. It may cost $50 instead of $500. So, I mean, there are ways to do it, but of course, people in all walks of our life is the idea that we should privatize everything and we should profitize everything. Mm. And so this is against that. And there's a lot of people who don't like that. They think, oh, you know, private enterprise can do this. We have jails in this state and all over the country that are private jails. I do a protest once a year in Georgia at the School of the Americas. And it's a little tiny county there, 6,000 people. The company came and built an 1,800-bed prison without a private company, without any contract to fill it. They just knew that if they built it, people would come. So they built it. They first negotiated with the county. Well, the county doesn't have anywhere near that kind of people to put in there. They negotiated with the state of Georgia. Georgia's trying to cap their prison population for finances. But what did they figure? They found, look, well, we're jailing hundreds of thousands of immigrants every year. So they got a contract with the federal government to fill it with immigrants who are detained and on their way out, but they have a place to stay. So, I mean, the prison industry is just in and of itself is a big source of jobs, money, power, that sort of stuff. And unfortunately, this decision about bail and bonds is, it's really a huge fork in the road for people. Because those who get out at that point, they have a chance. People who get out have a chance to hold on to the rest of their life. They get a chance to continue their job. They have a chance to go meet with their minister or their family or whatever and say, look, I checked voluntarily into this AA meeting or whatever, that sort of stuff. And then they have much more of a chance to be able to come back to court and say, even if I did it, you know, here's reasons why you should believe I wouldn't do it again. Whereas if somebody's been in jail for 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, which is often the case in New Orleans, if they're in jail for 9 months, what are you going to do? What is the judge going to think? They're going to think, well, you've been in jail for 9 months, so obviously nobody in your family is really ready to go to bat for you, because they think, you know, if they really wanted to, they'd find the money, which not everybody can do that. And then, you know, you'd
That's
certainly,
a hell of an assumption.
Yeah, you really didn't learn. I mean, you're not learning anything in jail. And then there's also, by that point, person's already done a fair amount of a sentence, and it puts a lot of pressure on individuals to just say, well, I'll plead. Whatever I need to do, let's just get me out of here. I don't believe in this system. It picked on me because of my race and because of my economic situation. I'm in here with other people who did or didn't do it. I'm getting abused every day in this damn jail by the guards or by the other inmates or whatever. And I'm halfway through the end of the punishment anyway. Just plead me guilty and get me the hell out of here. And people don't realize. Well, they realize, but they, I think, minimize the consequences of them pleading guilty to a felony, which just makes the next time they show up, they're dead, because you're already a convicted felon. Then you're up to multiple billing and all that other stuff. And all that really starts, that fork in the road starts within 48 hours of being arrested, when there's a decision whether they get a fair and bond or not. And I think, honestly, There should be hardly anybody in jail waiting trial. They should only be the people in jail that we are as justifiably afraid of, that, you know, that they have proven by their conduct that they are so scary that the, you know, the rest of us would be at risk if they were let out. Or people that, for whatever reason, we don't, you know, maybe they're from Montana and they've made it clear they're not coming back. But people who have parents and history in this community and are in for drugs or nonviolent crimes or sex crimes or fighting or assault, you know, something short of shooting, killing people, stuff like that, those people shouldn't have to be in jail waiting for this thing. It's just fundamentally unfair. So I would vigorously dispute what the district attorney said about, you know, nobody has a constitutional right to bail, and his suggestion that people aren't innocent until proven guilty. I just think that's a backwards way of looking at it.
Well, there it is. Thank you very much, Bill.
Okay.
I appreciate you being on the show.
Okay, great. Thanks.